Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello everyone everywhere, this is Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast today. Today is part three of my three-part, just absolutely fabulous interview with retired Major General Craig Weldon. Now, if you missed any of the preceding two episodes, you need to go back and catch up because it was just an absolutely fantastic conversation. As a former cavalry officer, oh man, we had a lot to talk about. And it all relates around leadership, not just military leadership, but leadership even in the private sector, in your own entrepreneurial business. You can put these concepts to work and be successful. Oh, it was just a great conversation. Now, today we're going to be talking about leadership perspectives and climbing the ladder of success in your business. And we start off with an example that will just shock a lot of people. Here we go with General Weldon.
And he said, a career in the military is like climbing a ladder. When you start out, you stand at the bottom of the ladder and you grab the first rung. Your feet are still on the ground, but you're looking up at this very, very tall ladder, and it's a tall ladder, and the very, very top rung of the ladder for the military is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. That is the senior military position in the United States. So all of us start off on this ladder, all officers, all of you started off on this ladder by getting commissioned as a second lieutenant. And when you did that, you grab that first rung on the ladder, and then you reach for the next rung, which is first lieutenant. And that wasn't too difficult. Your feet are still on the ground. The rung is within arm's reach. You're not tired. But as you continue to climb this ladder of your career and you reach for the next rung on your ladder, the rungs get further apart, metaphorically speaking. They get it's harder because they are you're climbing and you're tired. The air gets thinner because you're getting higher. And sometimes you even have to jump from one rung that you're standing on to get to the next one, and that's sometimes risky. Everybody gets to their last rung on their ladder at some point. And for the vast majority of us, well over 99.9%, it is not at the top of the ladder. It's somewhere between the first rung and the last rung. Yep. So as you sit here today as a student at Command and General Staff College with about 10 years service, you need to say to yourself, where is my last rung on the ladder? Strive to achieve that. Do everything you can. But when you get there, don't be disappointed. Be satisfied. And everything else after that is gravy. And I thought, that's pretty good advice. So I thought that day, I want to be a battalion commander. And if I become a battalion commander, that's a command of soldiers of anywhere from 500 to about 1,000 soldiers. If I get to that level, then I will be satisfied that I will have achieved my last rung on the ladder. And it took me a couple of more rungs on the ladder. I had to get promoted to lieutenant colonel. I had to come out on the command list. But I was able to get that a couple of years later, about 5 years later, and I became a battalion commander. And then everything that happened after that, I had to remind myself, okay, this is gravy. This is icing on the cake. This is well beyond what I expected. And if I retire tomorrow at this grade, at this rank, at this position, I need to be satisfied because I reached my rung on the ladder. I have spoken to a number of colonels, full colonels, who retired in both the Army and the Marine Corps, disappointed and bitter because they didn't become a general. Because they were standing on the rung of a ladder and reaching up to the next one, but it was out of reach. And they thought it was so close, but it wasn't. And I said to each of them, you know, you have achieved a tremendous goal in the military by reaching the rank of colonel, and in many cases being a commander as a colonel. You need to look forward. Don't look back. Find another ladder to climb. And to your listeners, I'm 68 years old. I am starting a new ladder. I'm standing at the bottom of my ladder. I'm probably on the first or second rung right now as an author and a speaker. And I'm happy to do that because so much of the satisfaction comes from the journey, not the destination. And at 68 years old, starting as on a new ladder, I can certainly do that. But to your question, because you ask about the 1%, as I said, 99% of us never get to that 1%. What is a 1%er? Right. 1%er is somebody who does become the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It is someone who becomes the CEO of a major corporation. It is a movie star that gets an Oscar, or a singer that gets a Grammy, or a television personality that gets an Emmy award. It is the world-class athlete that gets a gold medal or several gold medals at the Olympics. Those are the 1%. And the point I made in the chapter immediately following how tall is your ladder is be careful what you ask for, because if you strive to achieve that 1% level of accomplishment, it comes oftentimes with great, great sacrifice, and you might very well regret it. I had a friend who was a colonel who graduated from West Point, and he went to reunions after he retired. This is just a couple of years ago. He told me he went to a reunion recently at West Point, and across the bar and across the room, he saw sitting at the bar by himself a classmate of his that had graduated from West Point in the same year, who had retired as a 3-star general, very, very successful. But he was by himself, and his back was turned, and he was sitting at the bar. So my friend went over to him, and we'll call this fellow John. He went over and he said, "Hey, John, how you doing? I haven't seen you in a long time." And when John turned and looked at him, he saw tears and wetness in John's eyes. And he didn't know whether that was because something was bothering him or because he just had too much to drink. Mm-hmm. But he said, "Are you okay?" And John said, "You know, I busted my tail for 37 years. I did everything the Army asked me to. They rewarded me with promotions and command jobs. And along the way, my wife left me and my kids won't talk to me." And so that gets at the issue of the 1%. You know, is it worth all the sacrifices that he put into his career, which he later learned sacrificed his family? Yeah. And people have to make those decisions. Let me tell another story, if I may, and some of your listeners may have heard this. There's a professor. He's standing at the bottom of the class, and he's looking at the class. He's got a table in front of him. It's covered with a cloth. And he reaches under the cloth and he pulls out a glass jar, and it's a large glass jar. And then he pulls out a basket of rocks, and he starts putting the rocks from the basket into the jar until it fills it all the way up to the top of the jar. And he turns to the class and he says, "Is the jar full?" And they all go, "Yep, jar's full." So then he reaches out underneath the table and he brings out a bag of sand. And he pours the sand into the jar, and all the sand granules drop amongst the rocks and they start filling up the jar until it gets up to the top. And he says, "Is the jar full?" And they all kind of feel a little silly now, and they say, "Well, okay, yeah, it's full now. You fooled us that time." And then he reaches out and he pulls out a pitcher of water. And he pours the water in the jar, which has sand and rocks in it. And the water goes amongst all the sand granules and amongst the rocks. And it fills up to the top of the jar. And he says to the class, "Is the jar full?" And now they feel silly because they, you know, twice they've been fooled. "You're not going to fool me a third time." So they're not sure what to say. And he said, "You know, I don't have anything else to put in this jar. But the moral of the story is the rocks represent what is most important in your life. Put the rocks in the jar first. Because if you put the water and the sand in the jar, you're not going to get every rock into that jar." Yeah. And so you need to figure out what is most important in your life. That could be your career. It could be your family. It could be your faith. It could be making a lot of money. It almost doesn't matter what it is. But you need to figure out what's most important in your life and put those in. So back to the climbing the ladder story, back to the 1% story, back to the 3-star general story. That 3-star general probably put the wrong rocks in his jar when he did, because he sacrificed. He left the family rocks on the outside. Now, how does this apply to me? This applies to me because in 1999, on Christmas Eve, my sister, who was 8 years younger than I was, committed suicide. And she took her life for reasons that I won't go into here. But it made me reflect at that moment about the importance of life and relationships and all of that. And I had a 14-year-old daughter. Now, my daughter, who is wonderful and was wonderful then, continues to be wonderful, was not at any risk like my sister had been. But I wanted to make sure that I set the conditions for her success at age 14. So I told the Army in 1998 that in 2001, right before 9/11 occurred, that I wanted to retire when I hit 30 years service, because I could retire as a two-star general at 30 years. And I said, the reason I want to do this is so that I put the right rocks in my jar. And the most important rock for me right now is my daughter and ensuring that she launches off in life the right way. Well, the Army tried to talk me out of that and keep me in, but I said, you know, I will do what the Chief of Staff of the Army wants me to do, but if you're asking for my vote is that I continue and I refocus the priorities in my life. And he agreed with that. So in 2003, I retired. We moved to Celebration, Florida, the town that Walt Disney World built. Yep. And my daughter finished high school. She went to college, commuted from home at the University of Central Florida, graduated cum laude from that. She got a part-time gig at Disney World as a lighting technician, which she turned into a full-time job after she graduated. She's now a lighting designer for the shows that they put on at Disney World. So when you see all the lights that come on to the Magic Kingdom castle and all that sort of thing, she's the one that kind of choreographs those sorts of things. She's married, happy, owns her own home, travels all over the world. Life could not have turned out better for her. And I give 99% of the credit to her and maybe 1% of the credit to me for ensuring that I put the conditions in place for her success at an early age. I put the right rocks in my jar.
Yeah, amen. Amen. That's awesome. Now, we're getting ready to run out of time, so I want to try and get a couple more questions in for you. You give some especially poignant examples of risk-taking and risk aversion. And, you know, in the military, that's what we get paid for. From, you know, your background all the way in the canoeing incident as a teenager and, you know, some examples of soldiers being killed in training incidents. And I know when I was in the cab, I constantly reminded my troopers that, you know, tanks are designed to kill people and they don't care who that person is. You know, in other words, if you don't respect the tank, it will kill you or someone else. But there are always risk reward opportunities in everything we do. Can you explain the risk reward strategy you outline in your book and how that can be used in business today as well?
Yeah, there's a reason why young soldiers are good at what they do is because they are a bit risk averse. And most of your listeners know this because they went through that period of time in their own life. When you are 17, 18, 19, 20 years old, you think you're invulnerable. I thought I was invulnerable. Bob, you probably thought you were invulnerable. Mm-hmm. Nothing can happen to me. And you take risks that you otherwise would not take. Part of the reason for that is that your brain is not completely matured yet. And I don't mean that in a, a sociological aspect. I mean, physiologically, it is not completely done. It takes until about the age of 25 before the brain, the one that works on reason and rational behavior and all those kinds of things, risk aversion, all those things are in the front part of your brain. And it isn't until about the age of 25 that you that it matures in that way. And so I didn't realize that when I was a young person. But what I did witness through episodes in my own life were risks that I took then on the job, in my private life, that I never would take today. And in even earlier years. But so what's the point? The point is that if you are a leader, either in your family, in your business, in your church, in your community, it almost doesn't matter. You need to be aware that young people will take risks that sometimes gets them in a lot of trouble and often results in their death. I think, I don't know what the statistics are, but a lot of accidents on the highway occur with young teenage drivers, not because of their skills. It's because of the risk that they take. They're driving too fast. They're driving because they've been, after they've been drinking, thinking that they're, you know, able to handle situations that they can't. And again, I've got a number of examples, as you cited several. I almost got killed in a canoe accident when I was 18. I was leading a canoe trip for teenagers who were in the 14, 15-year-old age, and I was only 18 years old, and I'm leading this canoe trip on rapid rivers in Wales. And I'll let your readers read about it in the story. But as I reflect back on that episode, I would not have done some of the things that I did, which almost killed me and perhaps almost killed some of the kids that were on my canoe trip. Luckily, none of us were injured seriously. But I also witnessed in the Army young people, lieutenants and young enlisted soldiers who were doing things that they shouldn't have done. And leaders need to be aware that this risk factor is present, particularly with that age group up until about age 24, 25 years old, and that they need to be especially cognizant of those risk takers and take care of the people so that tragedies don't occur.
Amen. You talk about finding the light at the end of the tunnel in your book. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, so I have a chapter in my book called The Light at the End of the Tunnel, and I tell the story about how I married my college sweetheart coming out of Purdue University. She was beautiful. She was wonderful. She was everything I possibly could imagine. And we went down to Fort Hood, Texas. And 2 years later, she left me. And I was absolutely crushed. It was the first major failure in my life that I had ever experienced. And I didn't know how to deal with it. And the way I did deal with it is I just invested myself in work. I just stayed at work rather than go home and stare at empty walls that had previously been filled with, you know, happiness. Mm-hmm. So I was a battalion maintenance officer for a tank battalion at Fort Hood, Texas, and my office was in the motor pool. I had 58 tanks and about another 50 or so vehicles. And one Friday night, about 7:30, I was in my office in the motor pool doing paperwork when in walked the brigade commander, Colonel Jack Woodmansey. Now, Colonel Woodmansey commanded about 4,000 soldiers. I was just one of them. We had never met before. And he said, "Lieutenant Weldon, let's go take a walk through the motor pool." And I thought at the time, what a perfect storm of bad luck. You know, here I am going through all these personal problems, and I'm at work on a Friday night at 7:30, and in walks the brigade commander and just the two of us. So we walked up and down the tank line for the next 20 or 25 minutes. He never said a word about maintenance. He never said a word about my personal problems. He never said a word about the condition or the appearance of the tanks. All he talked about were the challenges in life that he had faced. And this is a guy who was a White House fellow, very, very skilled. He retired as a 3-star general. And how he had overcome them, how he had faced them, how he had gone through adversities in his own life and come through them. And he never mentioned anything about my personal problems. But when we got back to the front gate of the motor pool, he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, "There's light at the end of this tunnel. You just can't see it yet. Have a great weekend." Yeah, and he walked out. And this Friday night, he took me out of the depths of despair that I was currently in and made me aware that a senior leader cared enough to take some time on a Friday night and go find this young lieutenant who he had never met before because of the size of his organization he was in charge of, and tell him, "Hey, it's going to be okay. There is light in the tunnel." So I about 10 years later, I'm now a battalion commander. I have 1,000 soldiers. I'm at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and I hear that Lieutenant General retired Jack Woodmansey is coming to Fort Knox. So I called the protocol office, and I said, "Hey, I used to work for then Colonel Woodmansey years ago. I heard he's coming. I'd love to have him come over and talk to my officers about leadership. I have about 40 officers. Can you contact him and ask him if he'd be willing to do that? They did. He agreed, and he came over. And when he came over, and we renewed our relationship from 10 years prior, we then went out amongst my officers. And when I introduced him, by telling him that story, telling my officers that story. And I said, you know, that's the true character of a leader who will reach down into the bottom part of his organization to make sure every member of his organization knows that the senior leader cares about him. Yeah. Now, the postscript to this story is that dark period of my life was 1976. In 1977, I was at the Armor Officer Advanced Course, and I met a young girl named Karen Lusk, 22 years old, who now has been my wife for over 42 years. And I cannot imagine life having turned out differently than it has. I have two wonderful children. I have a fantastic grandchild, four-year-old grandchild. He's the finest grandchild on the planet, I believe. And as I reflect back, I think, you know, I was in a dark place. I was in a tunnel. I didn't know where the end of it was in 1976, but there was light at the end of that tunnel, and I just couldn't see it yet. And one of the reasons we have high rates of suicide in young people is because they can't see. They're facing a crisis for the first time in their life. They can't see that there is light at the end of the tunnel. And as I reflect back, my sister's suicide, had she known how her kids would have, her three children would have turned out. Her middle child is a retired Marine Corps warrant officer who's married, has two kids, has turned out very, very successfully. He's like a second son to me. He was in boot camp. He had left home just the month before my sister took her life. And 20 years later, he's got two wonderful kids, a wonderful wife, wonderful home, another second career. And if my sister had known how her middle son was going to turn out, it makes me wonder whether she actually would have taken her life in 1999.
Yeah, amen. Amen. As we get ready to close, as I've mentioned throughout the interview, all of these topics that we've talked about and more are covered in your book, Leadership, The Art of Inspiring People to Be Their Best. Where can people get a copy of your book? Is it available on Amazon?
Absolutely. It's Craig Weldon, W-H-E-L-D-E-N. People often misspell it and spell it with a D-O-N, so make sure you spell the name right. But if you go to craigweldon.com, that's my website. It tells you all about the book. There's a chapter there that you can read about. There's about 22 testimonials about me or the book. There's videos there. There's podcasts. This podcast will be on my website if you'll allow it eventually. And my book is available in print, in digital form, and on audiobook on Audible. So it's available in just about any form that people are interested in.
Amen. I mean, I want to give a quick, brief story of a time when I had an interaction with a two-star general. I was a drill sergeant at Fort Bliss, Texas. And he had just opened up a new dining facility in that training area. And, you know, in basic training, you got like 45 minutes to run 300 people through the chow hall, and then the next unit's coming in behind you. Well, the post commander wanted to come down, and, you know, because of the opening of the dining facility, and it just happened to coincide with the time that we were going to be there. And he came up to the cadre, and he said, hey, anybody here from such, I'm trying to remember where he's from, let's say Missouri. And we called out and had one person in my platoon that was from Missouri. And he, you know, wanted to talk to him. So he came up naturally, you know, this is like the second week of basic training. So this private is, you know, quaking in his boots. And the general, you know, told him, go get your tray, come on in and sit with me in the cadre area and we'll have lunch and talk. All right. And the private, you know, his eyes got real big, says, sir, we're not allowed to go in the cadre area. And the general laughed and he said, that's all right. I think your drill sergeants will understand. And this private said, but sir, you don't understand. You're just a general. They're the drill sergeants. And every one of the cadre from the commander, the XO, the senior drill and all the other drill sergeants, simultaneously, all their heads pivoted and pointed right at me because he was my kid. And the general just, he sounded like Santa Claus. He was laughing so hard.
And he said, I think he'll understand. Don't worry about it.
If I can, let me just tell a story that happened yesterday. I got a call from a fellow that I knew 20 years ago about 15 years ago in Florida, after I retired from the Army and I was in Florida. I attended the Presbyterian Church in Celebration, Florida, the Celebrations Presbyterian Church. And this fellow called me yesterday on the phone from Florida. And he said, you know, Craig, I was just thinking about you and I wanted to reconnect with you. We hadn't talked in years. And I want to remind you of how we met. And I said, Joseph, I don't remember how we met. Remind me. And he said, you were power washing the sidewalk at the church on a Sunday afternoon. And he said, I walked up to you and I said, are you part of the contract crew that's cleaning the church? I said, no, I just went to the service at 11 o'clock this morning, noticed that the sidewalks need cleaning. So I went home and got my power washer and came back. And that's the reason I was power washing the church. He said, it struck me that this retired two-star general would show the humility to, you know, roll his sleeves up and just do what needed to be done. Yeah. And he said, well, you know, that's one of the character traits, I think, that makes an effective leader is to demonstrate that you lead by example and also remember your roots, that you were a young person once that did this sort of thing, and you're not above that anymore just because you're a senior guy or a retired guy.
Amen. Well, sir, if someone wanted to get in touch with you to ask a question or get more information and have you come out and speak to their group, etc., how can they do that? How can they get in touch with you?
Well, my website, craigweldon.com, has a contact page. They can send me an email through that. They can also find me on LinkedIn. I'm an open book on LinkedIn, and they can connect with me on LinkedIn if they want. Just type in the search engine, Craig Weldon, spell Weldon, W-H-E-L-D-E-N. I'm the only one on LinkedIn spelled that way. And I'm happy. And people will find that I'm very, very responsive. I used to tell people that work for me, if you don't hear from me within 12 hours, something's wrong. I say 12 hours because I do need to sleep sometime. but when you will hear from me if you reach out to me.
Amen. Well, General, it was absolutely a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you again for taking me down memory lane. And thank you for your great service to this country. Thank you for taking the time to come on the program today.
Well, thank you, Bob. It's been a real pleasure.
Amen. Folks, I may be just a tiny, tiny bit biased because of my background, but I definitely believe every person listening to me right now can benefit from retired Major General Craig Weldon's book on leadership. You need to get this book. I mean, if you're a business owner or a business leader, this book could literally save your business, grow your business, improve your business, which also means possibly improving your bottom line. And if you're not in business, that's okay too. This book will help you to achieve the next rung on the ladder of life. I mean, this book is awesome. I couldn't put it down once I started reading it, and I can't explain it any better than that. It's an easy read. The examples that General Weldon have included are spot on, true stories, living examples of the principles that he shares. You need to get this book. In fact, get two or three copies. Use them as gifts. You know, go down in the show notes, order your copies today, right now, while you're thinking about it. Don't let the devil tell you to wait till later. You know as well as I do, if you put it off till later, it probably won't get done. So don't do that. Order your copy today. General, thank you again for taking your time, and I wish you God's best.
Thanks. Thanks. Same to you, Bob.
Amen. Folks, that's all the time we have for today. For retired Major General Craig Weldon and myself, this is Pastor Bob reminding you, be blessed in all that you do.
Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this, your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting.
Become a sought-after guest on Faith-Based Podcast. Share your unique insights and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the Faithcasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. Faithcasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a faithcaster. Faithcasters, your voice, your platform, your success.